If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door, no insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
How long have you been going without sugar in your life?
I haven't had sugar, flour, or caffeine in over 35 years.
What is it that we can expect if we try this for 30 days? How does sugar addiction compare to other substance use disorders?
I've been studying substance use disorder. It'll be 40 years. I genuinely believe that this is the worst addiction pandemic the world has ever known. They're calling Alzheimer's diabetes 3. This is a brain illness. The frontal cortex is running the show here, and it's hijacked. Genuinely hijacked.
What are some good snacks? You know, it's easy to throw a grape in my mouth and walk away. What are some true snacks that have no sugar in them?
I'm going to throw you a curveball and say that snacking is an emotional event, not a nutritional event.
What would you say are some strategies so they can get started?
We do a Quit Sugar Summit, 40 or 50 speakers with all kinds of this kind of information.
I'm considering talking to my household about trying to be sugar-free, and then I can report back too. To let you know how it worked for us.
On this episode of Misunderstood with Rachel Yucatel, we dive into the sticky truth about sugar addiction with Michael Collins, founder of sugaraddiction.com and chairman of the Food Addiction Institute. This guy has been off sugar for over 30 years and has been teaching people how to live a sugar-free life. Not only that, but sugar, caffeine, and flour-free. I cannot wait for you guys to hear this episode. He has spent over a decade leading the charge to expose the hidden dangers of sugar and helping people break free from its grip. In this eye-opening conversation, we'll explore why sugar may be the most socially acceptable and yet highly addictive substance in our diets. You'll learn how sugar hijacks the brain's reward system, how it's linked to a host of chronic health problems, and why kicking the habit might be the most transformative decision you ever make for your mind and body. Plus, Michael will share practical tips for detoxing from sugar and reveal what happens when you finally say goodbye to the sweet cravings for good. If you ever wondered how sugar really affects you and whether life without it is even possible, you won't want to miss this episode. Please enjoy my conversation with the sugar-free man, Michael Collins. So many people struggle with, even if they don't know they struggle with it. So we are going to get right into sugar and sugar addiction. But thank you for joining me.
Thanks for having me. It's an honor. I appreciate it.
So I want to find out from you what made you go on this journey. Tell me about your upbringing. Were you a kid that was overweight? Were you a kid that ate a lot of sugar? How did you get into this?
Yeah, no, thanks. It really probably started a generation ago, maybe two. My grandmother died when my mom was only 8 years old. And the reason that's relative to the story is that they made a deal with the guy who owned the store across the way that anytime my mom walked into that store, my grandfather had said, just give it to her, give her any candy she wants and put it on my tab. And my mom grew up believing that sugar was love. And I grew up that way. We had unfettered access to the sugar bowl. Nobody ever said no or that's too much or anything like that. And, you know, my mother was always eating it. So she always had a stash and was always baking. And anyway, I grew up that way. Fast forward, I run into beer at 13 or 14. And I want to make sure this is like the main arc of the whole lesson, if you will, podcast information is that I didn't realize sugar was changing how I felt. I didn't realize that it changed how I was like, that it could stuff down feelings or anything like that. But I knew beer did. I was kind of shy and I could talk to girls, you know, drink behind the high school and go to the dance and talk to the girls. And so I realized that, you know, that was happening. But, you know, who knows at that age, right? So anyway, quick fast forward. That party lasted till I was about 28 and I got sober. And I can talk about that if you want. But more importantly is I went right back to sugar, as a lot of people do, both recovering and, you know, I really do genuinely believe it is the gateway drug. But it's unconscious because it's always everywhere and almost free and child can score it. You know, no one realizes. Some of the people now in the world of emotional eating, they get it sort of, but it's still, they still don't understand it in a deep way, the way that they should understand it. So anyway, keep going, fast forward. I had a regular life, kind of, you know, business and what have you. But I had a couple of kids, twins actually, and I somehow talked my wife at the time into having them with no sugar, no flour, no caffeine while she was pregnant until they were 6 years old. And you can imagine that this is kind of a different story. And they, you know, especially this is like 30 plus years ago, they didn't really, you know, no one realized that this was happening. So we were fighting against the grandparents and the schools and everybody, the parent, and everybody thought we were depriving them of childhood, right? Anyway, they always said, Dad, you should write a book. And I bought Sugar Addiction when I was about 2009. I was kind of still working. I didn't really put much time into it. And then about 2016, I started doing these summits where we've interviewed, you know, everybody that you can think of in the world of sugar reduction. And that was really part of the kickoff of the book came out in 2018. And this is really where the thing blew up. So here I am now, semi-retired. I'm coaching. I'm doing these summits. I'm doing the, you know, whatever. The book is, you know, I'm running around promoting the book. And then 2020, the pandemic hits. And you remember all of the junk that the newscast, they're buying out the store, like no sugar, no flour, no soda, no ice cream, no candy, no alcohol, and they're staying at home. But more importantly, everyone started to understand what Zoom was, okay? Even grandma could use Zoom. Anyway, now 4 years later, we've got 5 support meetings a day. We've got 25 coaches running those things. We just got approved by the National Board of Health and Wellness Coaches. So it's been a little bit of a journey that I guess the short answer to your question is it started with my mother and my when my grandma died.
So when your grandmother died, was anyone overweight from all the sugar? Did it affect them physically?
You know, it's surprising that my mother wasn't 300 pounds or 400 pounds, but she gained 60 pounds on my birth and on a 105 pound frame. And she told me point blank that the only thing she ever ate was sugar when she was pregnant with me.
Okay.
But when she was younger, you know, even when I was younger, very few people were overweight, likely because high fructose corn syrup hadn't hit the market till the 1980s, you know. So, yeah, no, it wasn't a weight issue then. It was really what this, you know, kind of the arc of a podcast that I try and get across. It was really the emotional life that she was tamping down. You know, she wasn't in a happy marriage, and she was kind of a people pleaser. So it was really, you know, again, it's an addiction recovery thing, not necessarily an eat less and exercise more thing.
Right. No, I get that. So wait, you talked, first of all, how long have you been going without sugar in your life?
I haven't had sugar, flour, or caffeine in over 35 years.
Wow. That must be hard to do in this day and age. It's like being a vegan or something. You really have to plan out where you eat, what you're eating. And we're going to get into all that. I'm curious, you brought up your kids. So you made this pact with your wife at the time to keep them off of sugar, caffeine, and flour until they were six. Did they make it that long?
Yeah, no, they made it. And the only reason they, like, we were at a birthday party, it was a roller skating rink, and, you know, the cake and ice cream came out yet again, and they're like, the both of them, like, looking at, you know, they couldn't hear them because it was so loud, but come to find out, you know, they just wanted us, can I just, you know, we just gave up. We couldn't fight it anymore. We were fighting the grandparents and the schools. We couldn't fight anymore, but we regained the resolve the next day, and they never had sugar in the house, but they had it at outside birthday parties after that.
Right. And I'm just curious, in their life now, do they eat it? Is it something in their lives? Have they had kids? Do they give it to their kids? What's their belief on sugar?
One of them has had a kid and they don't have sugar, no. And the wife is a OBGYN, so that's pretty lucky. But anyway, the bottom line is they were never, this is interesting, because they were never attracted to substances to self-soothe, which is the real message that I try and deliver, is like, I've never seen them intoxicated. Weddings, graduations, I've never seen them intoxicated because they're just not drawn to it. And coming from my background and their mother's background, you know, if you believe that, you know, genetics plays any role in it, they should have some issues, but they're just not drawn to it. And they're not drawn to sugar. They do eat it, but it's like they're somehow we've broken the chain, and they're not attracted to it, you know?
Right. So let's get into sugar addiction. In your experience, how does sugar addiction compare to other substance use disorders?
Yeah, good question. So look, you know, I've been studying substance use disorder. It'll be 40 years on the day after Valentine's Day here. So I help people get sober for 20 of the years before I got into the sugar business. So the substance use disorder world is something I'm very familiar with. Mm-hmm. And I've done 40,000 plus detoxes and thousands of people one-on-one and had coaches do more. And I genuinely believe that this is the worst addiction pandemic the world has ever known. It's, you know, people never give it credit for being as powerful it's a very common construct in the world of alcohol and drugs. If you start using alcohol and drugs at 14 or 15, you stop growing emotionally. Mm. Well, extrapolate that backwards to a 3 or 4 year old, right? Someone who, like, the mom gives them a cookie. They don't form this habit like, and in a conscious way, like you need a beer on a Friday to numb out because you're sick of the boss, whatever. You just have a craving for a sweet and you just keep doing it and just keep doing it. And then you wake up at 30, 40, 50, 60 years old and you're 50 or 100 pounds overweight and you don't realize that you have literally outsourced your emotional management system to a substance. And now the science is very clear that what I'm describing is very, very possible, actually very, you know, very real.
This new year, make your sleep a priority with Dream Ease from Holistic Goddess, the natural way to achieve restful, rejuvenating sleep. If you've struggled with sleepless nights like I have, you know how much it impacts your life. I used to rely on prescription drugs to fall asleep, but since discovering Dream Ease, I've completely transformed my nighttime routine, and I no longer need those pills. Dream Ease is packed with safe, all-natural ingredients like melatonin to regulate your sleep cycle, valerian root to calm your mind, and passion flower for gentle relaxation. These carefully chosen botanicals work together to help you drift off naturally, stay asleep longer, and wake up feeling refreshed, not groggy. Unlike prescription options, Dream Ease is non-habit forming and free of harsh chemicals, so you can trust it to support your health without unwanted side effects. Visit holisticgoddess.com today to learn more and start your journey to better sleep. Make 2025 the year you take control of your nights and your days with Dream Ease. Use code UNDERSTOOD at checkout for a discount this holiday of 20%.
Can you explain the difference between physical and physiological dependence on sugar?
Yeah, no. So the beginning, you know, you have to think about this as a nicotine habit. Like withdrawals are not that hard. Mm-hmm. They're doable. You can do them physiologically biochemically. It's not that difficult, except because it's always there and nobody's thinking about it, you know, you kind of fall back. But mentally and emotionally, I really believe, and this is where sugar gets no respect. People in the, what do you call it? The emotional eating world, they got part of the puzzle, right? The emotional eating, the comfort food, that kind of stuff. They've got part of the puzzle, right? But they believe that you can eat a little bit of sugar. And even the eating disorder folks say that all foods fit, that you should be able to eat a little sugar and flour or you are not well. You're not graduating. And that's just wrong. And, you know, in my experience and with, you know, my contemporaries, that there is a biochemical connection and that literally it shrinks your brain. It puts holes in your brain. It takes over, hijacks the frontal cortex, the limbic brain. And it's just a real, can I swear on this? It's a real son of a bitch. It's a real difficult thing that people are just now. It's like when cigarettes were, the science finally said, you know, this is bad. But the problem is the general public hasn't caught up with it yet.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Well, because it's everywhere. And I think that people don't see this as a killer. They don't see it as affecting your moods, like what you said before, alcohol or any of these kind of drugs or things you can get addicted to. And I think, I mean, I'm just using common sense here, but I think that people assume that unless you are overweight or someone who is like an emotional eater or has an eating disorder, right, that's when you can associate that this person might have a sugar addiction or a food addiction. It might not be associated with the average person who is eating a lot of sugar. So let's start by just defining, what is sugar addiction? How do you define it for the person listening that they can understand, oh, maybe this is me or it's not me?
I mean, it really, all of the categories of the DSM, the Diagnostic Statistical Manual, they all fit the tolerance, the sneaking, the hiding, the adverse consequences, the denial, all of these things fit in the same, 20% of the people that call me are crying, that they think that they're alone in this, like that they're the only people in the world that are throwing stuff in the garbage and then pulling it out of the garbage and lying and sneaking and hiding that behavior, right? And so the answer
to this would be considered an eating disorder then, right? Because isn't that an eating disorder?
So this is a very nuanced and important, it's a great question. It's a very important and nuanced distinction. Answer basically to your question is no. This is an addiction, okay? An eating disorder, again, as I, you know, talk about the if you go in for binge eating or you go in for bulimia, you are not well, considered not well, if you can't moderate sugar. I used to be the chairman of the board of the Food Addiction Institute, and there is science, all kinds of science and all kinds of life experiences, that biochemically about a third of people cannot eat sugar without setting up cravings for more sugar. And so it's, you know, yes, you've got to, well, you know, you've got to get brain, you've got to get biochemical repair of the brain first and as primary, as opposed to a behavioral belief that you can eat and moderate sugar. And moderation, like 100% abstinence is a lot, is like 100 times easier than 90% abstinence. That little bit, that 10%, just like an alcoholic can't have a beer on Fridays and they can't have a cheat day. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Same process biochemically.
What are the challenges that people go through with quitting sugar?
Well, again, you know, the addict or the withdrawals are, again, kind of like nicotine. They're nasty. They're not fun. But
and how many days until it sets in?
Yeah, it does. So we've done tons of them, and we can tell pretty much to the day. Days 1 through 5, 7, maybe 10, are the most important physical ones. You're going to be irritable. You're going to be hangry. You're going to be, you know, starving. You're going to have headaches. You're going to be lethargic, all these kind of things, these symptoms. You're going to, and if you do all at the same time, flour, sugar, and caffeine, you're going to be incapacitated days 5 and 4, 5 and 6. It's just, you're going to be having a real tough time. What's more important is about day 10 or 15, you're going to, you know, it's where the emotional work comes in, where you have to, you know, avoid the cravings. You have to do something else. You have to realize that when you're upset, you've got to learn a new set of self-soothing practices, meaning work out, walk, run, yoga. You know, people have they've outsourced their emotional management system for decades, and they've literally hacked 100,000 years of evolution, and they aren't able to. They're able to just sit on the couch and not have to go walking or running or do anything, you know?
If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door. No insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
I want to understand, can you define the difference, and maybe we go one at a time? What goes on in your body when you have sugar in it? The way that the average person has the average sugar intake, which I'm assuming is a lot, but you know, I think that's the standard for all of us. I mean, people that are real addicts, I'm assuming they're on a different spectrum, and sure, we want to talk about that, but on most people I know eat sugar, whether or not they know it. I mean, it's in a lot of our foods. So right. What does sugar do to our body?
Well, every reward system, every evolutionary reward system that was created to chase food and sex is affected by sugar. Your dopamine, serotonin, norepinephrine, GABA, oxytocin, adrenal glands, endorphins, cannabinoid receptors are all affected when you ingest sugar to certain degrees. And it creates crazy inflammation. It creates fatty liver, and you know, because fructose, for your audience, like half the table sugar molecule is fructose and half is glucose. And so the fructose part creates fatty liver. And this is an alcoholic's disease, creates fatty liver. Again, I said it shrinks your brain. There's like 140 maladies that have been associated. They're calling Alzheimer's diabetes 3. So it goes, the physical litany, the physical maladies go on and on. It's just ridiculous. But the part that's difficult, even though, say, an alcoholic is dying of cirrhosis or they're, and they still can't drink, you know, stop, the difficult part to explain and the difficult part for people to get or grasp is that is the emotional salve, the emotional, the ability to tamp down emotions and not feel. And so the behavioral change has to approach that way. It has to approach as an addiction recovery process, as opposed to, like, everybody that comes to me, 85, 90% come for weight loss and they want a diet plan and an exercise plan, right? Mm-hmm. And that's brainwashing from the diet industry, the $78 billion diet industry. And I got to slowly almost trick them, you know, move them away, because they'll buy, they will take up my time for months saying, can I eat this? Can I eat that? Can I eat that? It doesn't have anything to do with that. It doesn't have anything to do with what you eat or any exercise that you do. We exercise only to, you know, help our dopamine regenerate, our dopamine receptors regenerate. So, yeah, I mean, it's a hard shift. It's a hard, like, reframe is what it is for people to understand what, you know, the question you're asking.
Well, and but what does a body look like off of sugar? I mean, are you saying that if somebody gets rid of sugar in their diet, that they, you know, most people are holding on to an extra 5 to 10 pounds and they don't even know it, even if they're slight frame, you know, because yeah, they're just eating too much and they have to maintain, they have to really watch, get rid of all of it. They'll lose 5 to 10 pounds. They'll be less bloating. Their face will change. Their emotional state will change. Like, what is it that we can expect if we try this for 30 days? What will happen?
Oh, I love that. Yeah, yeah. Okay, so here's the, I have a coach that's an ultra marathoner. She runs 100 miles a week, and she was running 100 miles a week when she got here. And she still carried 15 extra pounds, okay? Mm-hmm. So that, you can never run, you can never outrun the, a diet like this. But I've had people put type 2 in remission. I've had hundreds of people put type 2 in remission and lose 100 pounds. Rheumatoid arthritis is a paper tiger, goes away completely 90%+ of the time. Lupus, all of these, a lot of autoimmune things. Pregnancy has gotten a few women pregnant. They've then tried, they'd given up trying, but they ended up getting pregnant. Mm-hmm. But here's the thing. This is interesting as hell. Of all of those things, right, when I do surveys, when I like say, what's the best benefit you ever got from quitting sugar? The number one benefit is that their brain came back online, that they could focus better, they could remember better, that their anxiety was lessened, right? And so, you know, to answer the question, I believe, and I think this belies all of the studies and all of the, you know, things that we've learned, is that this is a brain illness, and you know, the frontal cortex is running the show here, and it's hijacked, genuinely hijacked into behavior that is not like, not even what the person who owns the brain is getting. It's a problem. So it's, the answer to the question is, I think for most people who are, I don't know, cognizant, it's that brain relief, but you do get all that physical relief too. And the skin too. And if I could convince women to understand that the skin clears up so much, you know?
Mm. And not just acne, but just, you mean the coloring, the way.
Coloring, less wrinkles, you know.
So you're saying you could change what you've already gone through. It doesn't just prevent you from aging a different way, but you can fix what has already happened by taking it out. Okay, so I'm sure people are listening and are like, okay, well, I'm not an addict.
That usually gets their attention.
Yeah, I'm not an addict, but maybe I can watch what I eat. So first of all, are you saying that we need to have zero sugar in our system to achieve these results?
That's a good one. I do believe I'm a big fan in drug and alcohol world and in this world in harm reduction. Any lowering, any amount is a good thing. Okay. And the only people, it's not my job to tell people that they're an addict. Usually they know in their heart of hearts, but addicts do have to go 100% abstinent at least for 30 or 60 or 90 days. They got to at least get a reset, okay? The second group is, that's about a third of the population. Second group's called harmful users. Those folks, if they reset, they can have a little sugar once in a while. It's not a problem. But they, like you said, it's in everything, and they're not really conscious that they're eating so much. But all of those benefits will be conferred, or some of them, or percentages of them will be conferred on them if they cut back. Yes, if they cut back.
And I know people that are listening are saying, okay, but how long does it take for me to see and feel these results?
It's quick. It's really quick, really quick. I always tell the story of a woman who she had a knee operation, a joint replacement in her knee, right? And a lot of people think it's about the weight. She was not overweight, but she needed both her knees replaced. And I said, give me 90 days. Just give me 90 days. And today, 2.5 years later, she's never had that second operation because there's no pain and there is some regeneration according to her doc, you know? Hmm. So, I mean, it's just, and fatty liver, my head coach is 73 years old and has suffered from fatty liver for 20 years and complete remission. So I could go on, and people think that I'm making these things up, but I mean, it's very real. I mean, I've seen it hundreds of times.
Okay. So I think that it's obvious the things that people can cut back, and people that are listening, you know, you can take out all the gummy bears, all the cookies, all the things that you're adding into your diet, the Snickers bars, those are the obvious ones, the sugary drinks. And if we're adding in caffeine, obviously your morning coffee, your afternoon coffee. But for you, more of the question is, what foods or drinks have hidden sugars in it that we might not be aware of that we should start saying, oh, wait, I have to make a change here and I have to eat something different?
Yeah, I mean, the ones that are weirdly hidden, the ketchups and the tomato sauces and the beans and the...
But do those have enough to make a difference?
Oh, God, yes, yes, yes. Really? Yes. Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, it's just, it's a lot, you know, it's a lot. And it also, here's a main thing, too, and this if this is a problem for folks, it keeps the cravings alive. Mm-hmm. If you're having a big pasta dinner or whatever, or big, you know, even just tomato sauce with another dish or other things like that, or, you know, baked beans got a ton of sugar, and there's just a lot of things that have sugar. Things that have boxes and bags and cans and takeout and stuff, you got to be leery of and check on. We always ask people, and it's important that they eat on the outside of the grocery store as opposed in the middle where all the boxes and cans and everything are. So, yeah.
But to not have sugar, does that mean you can't have any fruit?
You're going to go there. You're going to go there. All right.
I've got to.
So here's the thing.
As I have a bowl of grapes in front of me.
Yeah, I know. Sugar-free, that's one on my hit list. Oh. So look, this is important. So the molecule fructose is likely the offender in the brain and the emotional problems, okay? Back in the day, we used to get, as we came up, as evolved as human beings, we would get fructose once or twice a year. Like when the bushes were ripe, that's it. Hmm. And or you want to get stung by a bee and get a little honey, but that was it, you know. Now today we have a complete 24/7 drip of fructose from fruit and fruit juice and dried fruit, right? And the science of fructose is really I don't know if I said it, but I'm going to say it again. The molecule in the fruit is the same as the molecule in the chocolate bar, the fructose molecule.
Good.
And so we have this constant drip of fructose, and there's so much research that fructose causes strange behaviors in animals, and I believe in humans as well. And that's really the issue. And you got to take dried fruit and fruit. If you're going to try and do this, even if you're just going to try and cut back, you got to take dried fruit and fruit juices completely off the menu. You can eat a bunch of berries like strawberries and blueberries and raspberries and stuff, low glycemic, low fructose stuff. But you can't eat those seedless things. You can't eat seedless grapes, seedless orange, seedless watermelon, because look, these things can't recreate in nature. They can't propagate again in nature. They are a man-made fructose bomb for sweetness, you know? And it just, again, I'll probably say this way too much, but it keeps the cravings alive and makes your job to cut back or quit harder.
Right. That's really interesting. You know, there was a documentary, Super Size Me. Do you remember this? And of course, it's about McDonald's, I think, where he challenged himself. Now I'm forgetting the guy's name, Morgan.
Yeah, I know who you're talking
Morgan about. Morgan Freeman, Morgan Wallen, all the wrong Morgans, but yeah, there's a guy in there who for a month only ate food from McDonald's. Yep. And by the way, now the guy's dead. Now, I don't know if we can attribute it to that, but he gained all sorts of weight. He died from a heart attack, I think it was last year. And this documentary was done years ago. But still, you think if this really affected his body, I think he gained a huge amount of weight. And what we found out in that documentary is that McDonald's adds sugar to the hamburger buns to get you to want more and to have more and consume more. And he said the cravings were so terrible. He wanted it so much. So, I mean, I believe what you're saying. I want to hear about your hit list. What are the, let's like rattle off everything. Because I think people are, now that you're talking, I mean, I'm thinking to myself, okay, I want to try this for 30 days, but could I? I wouldn't even know some of these things. So what are the absolute things that people cannot eat?
Oh, good question. So sweeteners, let me start right at the top of the weird list. It's like sweeteners are strange because when the body gets the sweet taste in the tongue, it's the body saying, where's the rest of this equation? Where's the calories and where's the dopamine hit? Like, it, you know, theoretically doesn't raise your blood sugar, some of them, not all of them, but some of them. And so you're not getting that blood sugar spike. So that's why people think it's good. But the behavioral change part of the process is they keep the cravings alive. Like if you were to quit all these things, just go 100% abstinence from everything sweet, in 10 days, your taste buds change. And so peppers would taste sweet. Carrots would taste sweet. Macadamia tastes like candy, right? But that takes just 10 days. And so what I ask folks to do, and as opposed to going down the litany in the list, is that there is nothing to sweeten at the beginning, okay? And maybe that handful.
And are you talking about, sorry to interrupt you, but are we talking about even the yellow packets, the sugar-free sweeteners? Those have to be off the list?
All of it. You know, the goal is to get to peace with this. Like I said, who wants to do this if you're going to be constantly craving?
Right.
You want to just not even think about it. That free rent in the head, like, shouldn't I? You know, nobody wants to do that.
Okay. Well, I know you don't really want to go down the list, but let's do it anyway, because people that are listening and driving or whatever need to hear this about what some of these things are that they should have or not have. So what are the big knots for you that are really important?
Don't drink the sugar, like sodas, teas, you know, flavored stuff. Don't drink it. That's number one. Okay. Number two is the obvious, the candies and the sweets and the cookies and the ice creams. And then it gets to what we talked about before, which is the foods that are containing sugar. And sometimes in really large amounts of, you know, you have to be, if you're diligent, you won't be eating. And this is hard because, you know, people eat out, they need convenience, they need this and that and the other. But eating out of boxes, bags, and cans and takeouts without scrutiny. There are some condiments and actually some foods, but the one thing that I haven't brought up, this is really going to throw you for a loop, and it's going to be hard, is that in order to do this right, you cannot eat flour either. So flour turns...
At the same time, you're saying this detox has to be... Okay.
During your reset, you know, during your experiment, if you will, because it'll keep the cravings alive as well. Right? And also flour turns to sugar in your stomach. Like it's like immediate, like injects your blood sugar and then you're craving sugar again. So, and that really, like people come to me like they for sugar, but then I say, look, in order to get this reset, you know, you've got to give up the flour too.
Well, the flour, I think people mostly are saying I'm giving up carbs as opposed to I'm giving up flour, right? I mean, is it one and the same?
Yes. Yes. Ultra processed carb. Yes.
Processed. Well, what's a not processed carb? Like
a sweet potato or, you know, like that.
So you can have a sweet potato even though it says the word sweet in front of it.
Yeah. So here's we have this group of, and sweet potatoes is kind of on it. As long as you're eating whole foods, you're all right. But we have this group of, we call them borderline foods. And borderline foods have four categories: nuts and nut butters, dairy, grains, and fruit and fruit juices and dried fruit, okay? Mm-hmm. And what happens when you start healing up, and I call it healing up, like you're healing up from the sugar addiction or the sugar abuse or whatever, and you do get a level of abstinence and you're not on anything processed, then those four groups start to, something, one or both or two or whatever will bother you. You know, you'll be eating whole bags of nuts, you'll be eating nut butter out of the jar with a spoon, you'll be eating a lot of cheese, you'll be eating a lot of oatmeal, whatever. And it starts to act like the sugar did. You start to get a little obsessed with it. Mm. This is what you have to watch out for as you navigate the path to, you know, sugar freedom.
Okay. And I just want to reiterate for anyone that's listening again, I think a lot of people, there's a big misconception that when you're going for sugar-free in your life, you're doing diet drinks. There's a whole section. I love gummy bears. Okay. I love anything gummy. There's a whole, in the health stores, they have all these gummy things that say sugar-free, organic. I don't even know what, but no, you know, low calorie, but right. Sugar-free is the biggest name on all these, a whole aisle of candy. So you're saying you cannot walk down that aisle. Sugar-free means nothing. It counts as sugar.
Got it. That would be correct.
Okay. Just making sure. Now,
so I want to delineate, like, this is for people who have tried everything. Mm-hmm. The name of the book, The Last Resort Sugar Detox, is because I'm the last house on the block. Right. Like, these are people who have tried everything. And what they've done, 95% of my clients are women between 40 and 80 or 90. And they've tried everything. They've narrowed it down that their Achilles heel for weight loss and health is sugar. They've tried it all, you know, and they've tried every diet and every food and every shake and every pill. And they just, now the science is becoming clear. There's a lot of press about it. And they want to explore the possibility that maybe that's what their issue is, you know?
Right. No, I mean, I find this fascinating. And there are a lot of places that people that are real addicts and they're at their wit's end need to do. But I also think it's important for the everyday average person who doesn't realize they're eating so much sugar. This is a fascinating topic. Okay. Give us a little bit about what can be, first of all, hold on, let me stop. What do you eat on a given day, morning to night? I want to hear it all.
People always want to know what the sugar-free man eats.
Yeah.
I would say that, if I were to describe it in terms of modern, eating pattern, eating things is I'm keto. I have a keto diet where I eat a lot of animal products and I eat some greens and some, you know, complex carbs, sweet potatoes and what have you. And I have attempted to do carnivore. Now, remember also, I have been a vegan. I've been a raw food vegan. I've been, you know, a vegetarian. And I've traveled the whole gamut, and this seems to have helped me both physically, emotionally, mentally, spiritually, to eat a little bit more animal products.
But again, going into supermarkets, there's whole aisles about keto.
Yeah.
You can't eat anything that says keto on a package.
You can't do it.
So those count as processed foods.
Ultra processed, yes.
Okay. And yeah, can you, you know, can you talk about the role of processed foods? How do they contribute to the sugar addiction? Because I think we've already talked about it, but I think I'm guessing that I'm right. The key they play is that they say things that they're doing, which gives you the cravings, whether or not the actual sugar is being put in there. It's just a substitute, correct?
That's exactly correct.
Okay.
You know, there's a kind of, I don't want to say it, it's a little disagreement in our community, even that like, we just have to call all the ultra processed foods, problematic as opposed to just sugar. Mm. So you're on the right track there.
Okay. So give me five foods that people can eat.
Well, I mean, anything, chicken, seafood, beef, any kind of greens, sweet potatoes, regular potatoes with, you know, you'd have to keep an eye on, but anything that's whole that doesn't come in a bag or box, a can that your grandmother or her grandmother would have eaten is okay.
What are your thoughts on eating out?
You got to be careful.
But okay, so I'm ordering a grilled salmon,
yeah,
or a roasted chicken from a restaurant because I think, oh, okay, this is an animal, fish, whatever, and it's going to be fine. No, do I have to say to the woman that I'm ordering this from, no sugar added?
Yes, that's hard. Okay, so you're starting to venture into the second, well, not the second, but a huge part of the process. And I'll shoot you straight and tell you that this is in essence a codependency recovery program in a lot of ways. It's a sticking up for yourself. It's a saying no program. And a lot of people don't want to be that person in the restaurant where they say, what's in the sauce?
Right.
What's in the seasoning? Like, I can't have, you know, they've got to like grill the waiter or the waitress to find out. And then, you know, the whole table starts to turn. Why is she being
right? Smart? It's a terrible way to go on a date, by the way.
Yeah,
you'll
exactly.
never get married, ladies.
You'll never
or men
get married.
If you act like this.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. So it's difficult to get to the, you know, like the reality of it. And it's hard, you know, even, you know, your own family, like 80% of the folks that we work with don't have their spouse's support because they've changed the diet so many times around the house that they're not doing it anymore. They're like, I'm not on board on this.
Right.
So, yeah. So you've got to stick up for yourself. You've got to say no, and no is an acceptable answer, but it's hard for some people. A lot of our folks are people pleasers. They're, you know, they've helped their husband and their kids and their boss, and they've just neglected themselves, quite honestly.
Right. Yeah. You said a lot of good foods that people can eat, which I'm sure are things that people can think about now and how they want to put that in their diet and prepare maybe meals for themselves if they don't want to go out. What are some good snacks that we can eat? Because I think a lot of people do eat. I mean, I love my dried apricots. I love my, you know, it's easy to throw a grape in my mouth and walk away,
yeah.
Raisin, whatever. So what are some true snacks that have no sugar in it?
Yeah, I'm gonna throw you a curveball and say that snacking is an emotional event, not a nutritional event.
Okay.
So it's like, we try and eat three square meals a day, but if you have to, hard-boiled eggs, deviled eggs, if they're made without sugar, with sugar-free mayonnaise. Nuts to some degree, if they can be, you know, real nuts, though. You can't, people don't realize that drupes, the seeds of fruit, and cashews, pecans, I think even almonds, are drupes that have been hybridized for fructose and making them sweet, taking the bitterness out. And so people end up like literally eating entire bags of cashews because they're getting that little bit of fructose hit. So you've got to be careful on snacks. Beef jerky.
I love beef jerky. But doesn't that have a lot of sugar in it?
Yeah, you got to find. There's a hard to find the sugar-free ones. Yes.
But see, we're talking about sugar-free. So now if I get a sugar, if there's such a thing as sugar-free beef jerky, aren't they replacing that with some sort of fake sugar? Or no, it's literally
there are a few manufacturers who are literally just beef and salt. and dried beef and salt, but they're hard to find and they're expensive as hell. The ones in the, you know, in the stores, you're 100% right. That's exactly what they're, you know, they've got sugar in them or sweeteners or whatever.
Okay,
celery pepper or a celery powder. I'm like, what the hell is celery powder? That's in bacon too.
Oh, interesting. Okay. So let me ask you a question. What, in your opinion, is the biggest misconception that you want people to know about either sugar addiction, sugar intake, anything that we're talking about here? What do you think that we're, people in general are missing and is your point with all the work and research that you've done in all these years?
Cool. Thanks for asking that question. So we've covered it here, and it does take, like I said, about the arc of a podcast for people to get to the idea that, yes, you've got to eat whole food, but you've got to start thinking about this construct that we discussed, which is, what am I tamping down emotionally? Like, what am I not dealing with in my life?
Right.
I continue to use this product, sometimes not even consciously. Like, I always tell people, like, you want to have you had a rough week and you want to have a beer or a glass of wine on Friday just to chill, to numb out, to not think. You know exactly what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Problem is that with the sugar, like you said, it's in so many things and it's so ubiquitous and near free, a child can get it, is that we don't, and I'm hopefully, you know, you're helping me and other podcasts are helping to understand that you're actually having this a little emotional feeling. You're not looking for a sweet taste on your tongue. You're looking for a dopamine hit. You're looking for a little bit of soothing.
True.
And if you can kind of cleave apart the food and the emotional benefit of the sugar that you're getting, then you can move towards behavioral change and get out of this mess, you know?
Okay, I love that. And you're saying what? Eventually you'll find something else to do to get that dopamine hit, whether it's stand on your head and do a yoga pose, or you will eventually you will just not be grabbing for a snack anymore because you just won't need that.
That's exactly right. And it's that's exactly when I hesitate a craving, go out for a walk, stand on your head, go to yoga.
And that is hard, by the way. That is hard.
It is. It is hard. But eventually what'll happen as the craving, this takes six, you know, it takes a little time, but as the cravings begin, you won't say, I feel like chocolate. You'll say, I got to go for a walk.
Right.
You're physically like, you won't, it'll be unconscious that you'll say, I got to go for a walk, or I got to go to yoga, or this boss is an ass and I'm going to yoga tonight or whatever, you know?
Right. Let's talk about awareness. This is my last question for you. Looking ahead, what goals for sugaraddiction.com or the broader movement are there to recognize and treat sugar addiction? What do you see out of the future of this?
Oh, I love future questions. So in 50 years, they're going to say, you know, they used to give sugar to kids, right? Like, seriously, it's going to be an adult treat. It's never going to likely be illegal, but it's going to be on the par of alcohol. You know, you're going to need an ID to have sugar. Simply because, you know, one of the things, it's strange, but my clients are women between 40 and 90, but I'm trying to get this down to childbearing age women.
Mm. And
if someone find out they're pregnant, they can quit sugar or they can quit alcohol like that day. They can quit smoking cigarettes that day, and not have it. But sugar is not the same. And that first 1,000 days is so important, that the brain development is so important that, you know, people, I talk about my kids and people think I'm bragging or lying or something, but their brain, like, I'm a smart enough guy, but they're like rocket scientist smart, like perfect scores on their college entrance exam smart. And I'm just not that smart. Neither was their mother. And so I really believe that there's even a big nonprofit first 1,000 days, but that brain development and now the brain science, there's a brand new practice, a brand new specialty called metabolic psychiatry, where they're using diet and obviously sugar is the number one first thing to go, to help with bipolar and all kind of different stuff. And so the message is that, you know, please read this, please at least pay attention to the science, you know. Start to understand that there have been huge advances in the last 3 to 5 years, last 3 years particularly. And that, you know, it is about food, it is about diet, it is about weight, but those are only byproducts of what the real damage that's being done is.
All right. So for people that have been listening, they're thinking, okay, I want to do this. I want to try this. Just what would you say are some strategies so they can get started? I mean, is it as easy as just be mindful in every meal, everything you're putting in your mouth going forward? Do you really need to have this? The more you cut down, we don't have to go today from, you know, to zero. We can start slow. And also, I think there is a level of withdrawal there. I mean, there's a thing in Calabasas, California called the ashram, and you go for 7 days and you detox on all these things, caffeine, flour, exactly what you're talking about, sugar. And it starts on a Sunday. And by Tuesday, it's only 10 people. Almost, you know, I would say 80% of the group is either having a headache, could be throwing up. And it's a thing. You know, I've gone probably, I don't know, 9 times in my entire life of 50 years. And I know that on Tuesday, everybody's sick and it's a detox. And I mean, I never assumed it was from necessarily sugar. I just thought it was from the way they were eating and drinking. And most of it was caffeine. But what are some efficient strategies that they can try today? I mean, would you say it's better to taper it off slowly with the bigger things? Would you say it's throwing things out in your cabinet? Would you say it's not having that coffee every morning? What are some strategies to be effective?
Yeah, no, tapering's okay, but no matter what happens, when you go to zero, there's always going to be the withdrawal. So it's the ripping the Band-Aid off does work pretty well, but the most important thing, the answer to your question is that you really need to be in a supportive environment. The reason people make it from Tuesday to Sunday there without it is because everybody's doing it with them.
That's right.
Otherwise, they don't know consciously that craving for the sweet or the caffeine would stop all these headaches and stuff, but they do it anyway if they're not in, you know, at the Calabasas retreat, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so support groups online, in person, but mostly online these days, are very helpful in to not be alone in this, because it is a, you know, if you do this, you're lonely. It's because, you know, like I said, your family's not helping, your work group, your friend group, they're not understanding, you know. And it really does help to have support. That's an important piece of the puzzle.
Right. All right. So if people want to look you up, get one of your books, you know, hear more about this, hire you for some help and what they're struggling with, how could people find you?
Yeah, we do the quitsugarsummit.com, depending on when this goes out, but we have a replay this weekend. But the Quit Sugar Summit is 40 or 50 speakers, 45 something speakers, with all kinds of this kind of information that are, you know, got a lot more letters after the name than I do. And then
What are the dates of that? Let's say
17th, 18th, and 19th.
Okay.
Yeah. So Friday, Saturday, Sunday, January. And sugaraddiction.com is where everything is. I'm on Sugar Free Man, you know, everywhere on social. The book is on Amazon, but you can go to sugaraddiction.com and download the book for free. I brought it back. Mike Collins, Sugar. I'm easy to find.
Amazing. Mike, this has been so insightful. I'm considering talking to my household about trying to be sugar-free, caffeine-free, flour-free for a month and just see how it goes. I don't know how good we'll be at eliminating stuff because I have a 12-year-old and, you know, it's going to be really hard. But I think it's a really interesting challenge. The month of January, a lot of people go dry and stop drinking. I don't really drink that much. So that to me isn't that exciting because I don't feel like I'll have a lot of benefit from it. But I feel like, you know, this has been really something interesting. And I think I might try and see if there's a way I can get my household on board to do it. And then I can report back too. to let you know how it worked for us.
I'd love that. That'd be cool.
Yeah. So I really appreciate this. And I hope everyone listening does take a moment to think about their lives, how it could help them, and reach out to you if you need, if they need some help. So again, Mike, thank you. We will be in touch. And it's exciting what the stuff you brought on the show. So I appreciate you.
Well, thank you very much. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much for listening to Misunderstood. I'm your host, Rachel Yucatel. Please be sure to subscribe to the show and give us a 5-star rating and review. You can support the show by joining our Patreon at patreon.com/misunderstood with Rachel Yucatel. Do you have ideas for the show or want to reach out? Email us at info@misunderstoodpodcast@gmail.com. That's spelled MISS understood. Thank you so much, and I'll see you next time.